Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
My world, and I'm sure yours too, is flooded daily with heartbreaking and frightening images from all over the world. Natural disasters, bombed out homes, the stunned faces of refugees, the eyes of maimed children, newscasts telling us of the homeless and jobless. At the gym, 20 gigantic TV screens each show some misery that's going on somewhere around the globe. No matter how you get your news these days, whether from newspapers, the internet, radio, social media, or TV, whether you read it intently on a device or glimpse it in an elevator or as you pass through a public space, you are likely to be confronted with challenging, disturbing information about the state of the world. Each day comes with fresh reports of war, disease, crushing poverty, oppression, and ecological menace. When I open my mail, I find painful statistics on hate groups in this country, on lost children in my city, on desperate people all over the world, on fighting and oppression. So much suffering. My heart literally squeezes, then releases and expands into a feeling of caring deeply for those nearby and those across the oceans. What can I do to help? Before I take action, I can be so sad and often so mad at the crazy way we humans react to the challenges of life. Every day, as all this recitation of worldwide suffering demands attention and help, it is easy to become overexcited, or frightened, or numb. How do we continue to care about what's happening to our mountains and oceans, to those in the endless and cruel conflicts across the globe, or what a young woman or child faces in Afghanistan, or Gaza, or even in our own hometown? How can we stay vulnerable and open to the world and not be overwhelmed? How can we be intimate with the way the world is and not let it overrun us, exhaust us, create in us a sense of hopelessness, despair, and finally, withdrawal? How indeed? The answer reminds me of the Buddhist image of the lotus flower that blooms in the midst of a fire raging around it. The closer the fire gets, the more fragrant the flower becomes, and the more beautiful and vibrant glows the color of the blossom. The fire represents the suffering that is everywhere, and the flower represents our caring energy that, through our efforts, gives aid and solace to a suffering world. The question is, how can our lotus bloom in the midst of the world's adversity? How do we relate to the magnitude of the suffering we see in our own community or other parts of the world? Do we become enraged, overwhelmed, numb? Or do we become even more awake, blooming like the lotus? Good evening again, everyone. Welcome again. Thank you for being here this evening. I ask everyone this evening to listen to tonight's talk with an open mind and an open heart. I think that my talk this evening ultimately really is about being open-minded and being open-hearted. And this opening reading that I shared really reflects both the critical and often heartbreaking state of our world and our country currently, and all that we're experiencing, all that we're living through, as well as those burning questions. What can I do? What can we do? Recently, Gesho and I came back from a short trip that we took to Sedona, Arizona, a place that we've come to really love a great deal, and we were able to really be with the earth, to connect with the earth, to touch the earth, that sacred land, in a very special way. And while we were there, we visited a Buddhist location, the Amitabha Stupa and Peace Park, and we came across a woman there, and we struck up a conversation with her, someone that we just randomly met there, and we began to have a conversation. And our conversation turned towards all of the things, all of the suffering that we're seeing in the world currently. And she used an expression that I've heard quite a bit over the past 2 years at least, an expression that I've used myself quite a bit over the past few years. She said, "The world is on fire. The world is on fire." We're living in a world, we're living in a society that truly seems to be on fire. And make no mistake, it is we ourselves, we human beings, that are stoking the flames of that fire. Every day, it's something new. More horrors, more violence, oppression, marginalization, and yes, genocide, starvation, ethnic cleansing. These things are happening in our world. These things are happening in our own country. These are human-created horrors. And again, it begs the question, what can I do? What can we do? Every day I see, I hear, I read something new. And it is truly heartbreaking. And I feel, as I'm sure all of you do, I feel the full range of emotions when I see these things, when I hear these things. The heartbreak, the frustration, the feelings of overwhelm, of despair, of hopelessness, and yes, of anger at times. And of course, many of us are a bit prone to doom scrolling. Right? We go to social media, and we're prone to this doom scrolling, and I do it as well. I go on social media at times, and I become prone to this doom scrolling. And yet, there is a certain importance to that, because we cannot just turn a blind eye. It is important that we truly know what is happening in the world, that we truly see what is happening in the world. And many of us, I think, experience those same feelings, those same emotions, those powerful emotions within ourselves when we see this, when we hear this, when we experience these things. And I find myself often recalling my teacher's words, my teacher's teachings, especially during difficult times, during times of challenge and despair. I remember many of his words and many of his teachings. And I remember how my teacher would talk about what we referred to as the real world versus the world that we have created. And when I hear a phrase, when I hear people say things like, "That's just the way things are. That's just the way things are. That's just the way the world is," I think to myself, no. No, absolutely not. We say this as if the world on its own is like this. As if the world by itself has evolved into this. It's just the way things are. It's just the way the world is. No. It is the world that we are creating through our own delusional thinking. We are creating this world through our own delusions. The Buddha taught that everything, absolutely everything, proceeds from the mind. As we think, so we become. As we think, so we create. And so this incredibly challenging and critical state that we're currently living in is very much our own creation. We are creating this in the world. When our thinking and our perception of reality is distorted and is delusional, then it follows, of course, that the world we create and the world that we actualize or make real is one of delusion and one of distortion. The mental fabrication of these ideas, these beliefs, these concepts, these doctrines, these dogmas of reality should never be mistaken for reality as it truly is. And our primary delusion, our primary distortion or fabrication, is that of separation. The Buddha taught this more than 2,600 years ago, that our primary delusion, our primary distortion, is that of separation, that we are all completely separate and independent beings, self-sustaining beings, self-actualizing beings, that we exist in this state of independent, this state of independent being. And we are completely taught and completely conditioned by most aspects of society to take this delusion of separation and complete individuality and to believe it unquestioningly as what is real. We are conditioned to take this and believe it as what is real. And when we believe it, when we take it to be true, blindly and without inquiry or investigation, then we become separated from everyone or everything to one degree or another. When we believe our truth to be the one and only truth, without openness or examination, then we're living in a distorted version of the world and of truth or reality. And perhaps worst of all, we become isolated. We isolate ourselves in our own little self-created and limited bubble or prison, our own little prison of our own making, of our own creation. But the thing is that we're also separating ourselves from our true self and from reality as it truly is. We are as if lost in a distortion of the world. We're lost in delusion. And when we become lost in this distortion, in this delusion of reality, believing this conditioned truth to be real truth, to be real reality, then we as human beings become capable of the most cruel and horrific atrocities, greater than any fictional monsters are capable of. When we believe in this delusion, then we start to think that we really know something, that we know this. We know something because we've been told or conditioned what to know. We've been told what to know. We are conditioned what to know. When we accept this distortion of reality, then we absolutely think we know reality because we've been conditioned to attach ourselves to that distorted reality and to not question it. Society tells us, shh, keep quiet. There's nothing happening here. There's nothing happening. Look away. Look away. And we're conditioned to accept, we're conditioned to look away, to be quiet, to not question it, and to just leave it alone, leave it be. When we cling to the delusion or distortion, then it becomes much easier for us to look away, to turn away from what can sometimes be heartbreaking realities. And make no mistake, it can be easy for us to want to look away, to want to turn away from it, to not see it, because it's so horrible, because it is so heartbreaking. We want to look away sometimes, because to look at it, we see the horror of it. We see the injustice of it. And so it becomes easier and easier to look away, to turn away. And perhaps all of us experience the subtle and not so subtle mental trauma and mental depletion and frustration of what we are seeing, what we are hearing, what we are experiencing on a daily basis. It is not easy. It is not easy, and there are no easy answers. There are no easy answers. And yet our practice, this practice, is a refuge. Not one in which to withdraw and to hide from the world, to withdraw and hide from what is happening in the world, to withdraw and hide from what we are seeing and experiencing. Not one that can promise to make everything sweet and good, but rather one in which we can stand upright and remain committed to compassion and to wisdom in our lives, even in the midst of atrocities, and to share that compassion and that wisdom with as many beings as we possibly can. Shohaku Okamura Roshi says, in Zazen, our practice is to let go of our fabricated mental map, to open the hand of thought, and thereby sit down on the ground of reality. Thinking can only produce a distorted mental copy of the world, and this copy is based on karmic experiences. But when we let go of thought, we understand that the copy in our minds is not reality itself. Then we no longer have to blindly trust our thoughts, and we can instead inquire further into the nature of reality. A distorted mental copy. When we hold on to that distorted mental copy, then suffering, and only suffering, can ensue. And there is no end to that suffering. But when we can let go of that distorted mental map, let go of thought, which is just concepts, which are just ideas, not reality itself, then we can begin to look deeply, to inquire deeply into the nature of reality, on what truly is, not what we've been conditioned to think that we know, not what we've been told reality is, but we can look at reality as it is. If it's our own delusions and distortions of reality that are at the very root of the immense suffering and injustices that we're seeing and experiencing in the world, and right here at home in our own country, make no mistake, then where can we begin to search for liberation, for transformation? How can we begin a shift in consciousness from delusion and distortion to reality as it is? In 1994, the late Roshi Bernie Glassman began an organization known as the Zen Peacemakers. I became a member of the Zen Peacemakers over a year ago. And also in 1994, when Roshi Glassman established the Zen Peacemakers, he established what is known as the three tenets of the Zen Peacemakers. And these three tenets really serve as a framework for how we can respond skillfully, compassionately, in a world on fire. These three tenets are: number one, not knowing; number two, bearing witness; and finally, number three, taking compassionate action. We often talk about how Buddhist teachings come in lists, right? We have so many lists: the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Brahmaviharas, the Six Paramitas. So we're going to add another one here with the three tenets of the Zen Peacemakers. And these three tenets have really grown so much since 1994. They've grown beyond just the parameters of the Zen Peacemakers organization, and many, many Zen teachers and Zen centers around the world have really adopted and teach these three tenets. And like other such teachings, the three tenets are really interconnected. They are not linear. Although they're taught always in that order, not knowing, bearing witness, and taking compassionate action, they are really interconnected. Each tenet reflects the others, and they are seamlessly embedded in each other. And we begin those tenets with not knowing. This is really the beginner's mind, that we so often talk about in Zen. It is that don't know mind that we speak of in Zen. It is a mind that is open, a mind that is attentive, and a mind that is flexible. And of course, this tenet is very difficult for most of us, this not knowing, this don't know mind, because we want to know everything. We want to know the answer to everything. And most of all, we want to believe that we know. We so easily get lost in that delusion when we believe, oh, I know, I have the answers, I already know. And so we want to believe that we know, making this tenet very difficult for us, this not knowing, this open, flexible, don't know mind, this mind that is always ready and open. It is being open to the many possibilities and to the many varying viewpoints, varying points of view in this dynamic and flowing, interconnected and ever-changing reality that we call life. This not knowing is not automatically becoming attached to one single viewpoint without inquiry, without examination, without looking deeply at it and considering other points of view. Because when we do this, of course, we freeze it. We freeze that viewpoint that we want to see as the one and only correct viewpoint, that we want to believe we know is the one and only correct viewpoint. We freeze it into doctrine, into dogma, into unexamined belief, into completely unexamined and unquestioned belief. The practice of not knowing does not signify not caring. It is not that we don't care, but rather it is being open to potentially caring about more than one viewpoint, as well as being open to relinquishing viewpoints that no longer serve us or others, that are no longer of benefit to ourselves and others. But this can only happen when we begin from a place of not knowing, and then opening ourselves to questioning, to inquiry, to investigation, opening ourselves to listening deeply and examining all viewpoints. The second tenet is bearing witness. Also not an easy tenet to follow, because again, it can be so easy for us in the face of challenges and atrocities to look away, to want to look away, to want to turn away, because it is so difficult to see what is happening. But this bearing witness is not turning away, not looking away, not denying, not escaping reality because of fear or because of discomfort. In essence, it is not to be separate. It is not to fall into the delusion of separateness, where I can lock myself away in that little bubble as this little individual me, in this little prison that I create with my own mind, and I want to keep everyone and everything else, including all of those difficult things, to bear witness to. Bearing witness is not easy, but when we look away, when we turn away from the horrors and the atrocities that we experience in the world, where is the compassion? Where is the caring in what we are seeing in the world? Where is our compassion? Where is our caring if all we want to do is look away, turn away from what we're seeing? Bearing witness is seeing or being open to all the aspects of a situation, including our own attachments and judgments, our own frozen opinions, beliefs, and concepts. And it is bearing witness to both the joys and the suffering of the world. It is bearing witness to the immense joy that we can experience in the world, as well as all of the suffering and the challenges, the atrocities that we can also see in the world. It is being open to looking deeply and honestly about what the causes and conditions are for the joy and for the suffering of all beings, including our own joy and suffering. And the openness of not knowing, of the first tenet, the openness of not knowing really combines with bearing witness to whatever is occurring or unfolding or continuing to unfold moment by moment. If we look away, if we turn away or ignore, where is that compassion and caring within ourselves? Where is our practice? The practice of Zazen, the practice of meditation, really trains us in bearing witness by cultivating attention and awareness to whatever arises and whatever passes away within us. This very practice of Zazen, of meditation, is one at looking deeply at ourselves. As Dogen says, it is to study the self, to look at ourselves, to bear witness to whatever it is that is arising within us, whatever emotions, whatever feelings, whatever thoughts are arising, and to also see how those thoughts drop away. And it trains us to see that we can respond from a place of open inquiry rather than to react or turn away from a place of habitual thinking and of frozen views, concepts, and ideas. And finally, the third tenet, compassionate action, taking compassionate action. This arises from not knowing and bearing witness. From that place of not knowing and of bearing witness, of not turning away, compassionate action arises from this, allowing for a more skillful and appropriate response in whatever form that action or that response may take, or when it might take place. And it connects with the other tenets in that we are responsible for our choices and our actions. Each one of us is responsible for our choices and our actions. We must bear witness to our own actions and to our own choices, not just those of others. Because we can be very good at seeing the choices and the actions of others, what others are doing, what others are not doing. But bearing witness to our own actions, to our own choices, can be so much more difficult. And that is to say, not automatically assuming that our viewpoint is the correct one, the only one, or the most beneficial one. We have to be open to examining that. When we think we have a point of view or an idea of what is right, what is skillful, we always need to examine that and not be stuck on feeling that our viewpoint is automatically the correct one, the only one. We can be open to examining what other skillful or appropriate choices or responses or actions might be needed from us. Above all, we should be open to examining the underlying intention of our own choices and our own actions. We should look deeply at whether our choices and our actions arise from an intention of compassion, of caring, and of wholesomeness, of what is for the whole and not just the individual, not just this individual self that I might consider myself to be. Now, I cannot and I would not tell any one of us, any one of you, how to take action in navigating this world on fire. I cannot tell anyone what action is appropriate for you. That's something that might look different for each and every one of us. And it's something that may vary based on time, on place, on circumstances. Our compassionate action can take many forms, and they can be very simple and subtle based on what we are able to do in any given moment. It may be something as simple as engaging in open and respectful dialogue with others, expressing how we are feeling, but doing so in a skillful way, or simply lending a hand to someone in need, someone in our immediate presence who may be in need. Thich Nhat Hanh says, "Don't worry if you feel you can only do one tiny good thing in one small corner of the cosmos. Just be a Buddha body in that one place. Bring your practice to that one place. Bring your practice to that circumstance, to what is immediately in front of you in any given moment. It does not have to be some gigantic action that we think is going to make a world of difference. It may be a tiny action that makes a world of difference for one single person. And it's taught in the Zen Peacemakers organization that sometimes the action, maybe the only action we can take, is to simply continue to practice the first two tenets of not knowing and of bearing witness. Continuing to practice these two tenets is itself a skillful and compassionate action, perhaps until such time that we may feel ready to engage in another compassionate action. And again, I cannot tell you what to know or what not to know. I would not tell any of you what action to take or what is a wholesome action. I wouldn't tell you what is a wholesome action because in your heart, you already know. You already know what is a wholesome and compassionate action. The three tenets require discernment. Each one of us must look for ourselves what is needed in this situation. What is required of me? What is needed of me in this situation? What is appropriate? What is an appropriate response to what I am experiencing in this moment? To what others are experiencing in this moment? But I do believe that each one of us can practice not knowing. Each one of us can practice not knowing, not being so quick to know, not being so attached to what we think we know. Each one of us can practice bearing witness, not looking away, not turning away in fear or anger, but staying grounded and staying fully present to what is happening, to what is happening in the world around us. And each one of us can practice compassionate, skillful action. Actions, however small they may be, that are wholesome and are of benefit, not just to ourselves, but that are of benefit to others, and especially those who are suffering. The three tenets are rooted in compassion, in caring, in skillfulness, and wholesomeness. It is about being of the collective and not just the individual. Each one of us is a light. Each one of you is a light, even in the most darkened and lonely corners of the world. Community and togetherness, Sangha, is a light. And the three tenets of the Zen Peacemakers can be like a map that helps guide us through the dark when we feel lost.